Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray, and with me as always is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, if you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex. What's up?
Not much. What's going on?
You know, life is good. Weather is hanging in there up into the upper 30s. You know, it wasn't snowing or raining today. Got to go on a little trip to go see my son, so that was nice. And now, of course, as always, this day and time, I'm looking forward to hanging out with you, maybe another cool poet or two, you never know, and, you know, just delving into poetry. So how's the weather treating you?
It's cold.
And life in general.
It's cold. No. That's it.
Yeah. Yep, I get that. I get that. And it's all relative, you know, because, you know, this time of year here, 30s isn't that cold, though it is still cold. But I know down there it can feel really cold. But, yeah, we do have a quite a few carryovers And so we have a few carryovers. I shouldn't say quite a few because that makes it sound like there's like 10 or more. But I think we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 carryovers. And then we will get into our main topic, which is we ran a contest with the artwork of Lucio Fontana, who was an artist from the 50s and 60s who wanted to create space holes to create art, which is actually kind of an interesting concept. And, you know, I always like putting art out there that, you know, kind of makes people think and what they get out of it. I like putting abstract art out there and seeing what people get out of it. So, just excellent right? And, or not right, I should say, we got some great lineup of rights tonight, which is very cool. And I see Pee-wee is hanging on the board. Always good to see him. So hello, Pee-wee. Thank you for hanging on the board. All right. And what do you say, Rex? Shall we get this ball rolling?
Yeah. There you are. All right.
It's there.
Can I look at the screen? All right. Pollinate by Pee-wee Cousin. Vision of divine ethereal beauty, I espied you from up in the sky, flying into this island of dreams, located the far side of my mind. Enraptured by your elegance, capitulated by your charms, inundated by such innocence, aimed for your alabaster arms. Quickly the months began slipping away. Seasons were spent in my abyss. Years now lost to the sands of time, traveling on in search of your kiss. Gazing into the mouth of madness, poison darts stuck in my veins. Toads licked their secrete no more on the very precipice of insane. An endless whisper of a moment finally had at least come to me. My memories had held so true, a lifetime gone, but I found beauty. Such a precious, delicate flower, bound in such an inhumane place. At last we were brought together. I can't wait to pollinate your face. And boom.
Great read, Rex, and what an awesome write by Pee-wee. I do enjoy the combination of, serious thought and humor, and especially the humor that comes out in that end. There's at least three different parts more. I mean, well, I like it all the way through, but what really stands out to me is, first of all, the mention of the toads licked, they'd secrete no more on the very precipice of insane. I like the thought of, the mention that he brings in the idea of, the toads that people lick in order to get high. I like the end stanza with such precious, delicate flower found in such an inhumane place. I like how that makes me think about the flower that grew in the sidewalk by who's that rapper? Tupac Shakur. Yeah, it makes me think of his poem, the flower that grew out of the sidewalk. Of course, that ending line is just so wonderfully borderline tacky, except for the fact that, that this poem, at least from the idea that I get of it, is mainly about you know, the idea of a bee or butterfly, you know, attraction to flower. But it also works on a nice duality level with the idea of the attraction of lust and throughout all species. And, I like how it speaks on that attraction and how the endless drive for it can drive us insane. Excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
It's a three-part look at harmony searched for. You got those first two stanzas being locked into the vision. The whole thing walks along a dream, but especially the first two. The second two kind of hit into the that loss of something slipping through the fingers, one's fingers. And that second stanza in the second batch hits on the back end of how deep that loss goes. Mouth of madness, poison darts stuck in my veins, toes licked, they'd secrete no more on the bright precipice of insane. The maddening notion of letting that drain through your fingertips. And then the last two completes the dream, an endless whisper of a moment. Finally, you had at last come to me. My memories had held so true, a lifetime gone, but I found beauty. That kind of hits the idea of wasting one's moments on this. And yet you get the completion of the dream in the bottom stanza, which offers up a notion, not just the humor, but a sensuality as well. I can't wait to pollinate your face. It does walk into the notion of bees and such, but it walks a bit deeper because of the dream thrown into it.
I like that. I like those thoughts. The idea of working, going like the idea that it, you know, it's walking through a dream and the three steps within the dream. So a dream within a dream, but really, really cool comment. And all right, what do you got for us next?
All right, we go to... Crimson Butterfly by Betty Page.
All right. Let me just... Here we go. And Crimson Butterfly by Betty Page. And it goes like this. She spins in cocoon. Darkness fills her fragile heart, wandering so deep. Sharp thorns consume her. Kiss of good luck awakens, makes her free again, gives endurance, strength to fly high above new wings into the heavens, shines in bright sunlight, glows radiant, resilient, illuminating, wrists dripping crimson, caressed by ancient magic, healed by enchantment. Phoenix butterfly, sweet fairy of dark forests, shimmers cherry red, sparkles as diamonds, zooming through blue universe, entwining with stars and poem. Oh, that was absolutely beautiful. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, the crimson butterfly, although it might actually be hitting on the note of butterflies, but the actual connotation there also walks within the butterfly knife, and works that way because of what she got in Sharp Thorns Consumer. Kiss of Good Luck Awakens Her, wrist dripping crimson, caressed by ancient magic, healed by enchantment. Now the offer up with the Phoenix Butterfly hits at that notion of passing over into that next realm because she had done slit her wrist. So this kind of hits at the notion of the hope in finding something beyond this realm while walking into the next one itself.
And it... Sorry, I'm having trouble. But yeah, I like that thought, and I can see that within that imagery. I was noticing her AN, and I have to say, I really need to watch Madame Butterfly. And I think, if I remember right, it's also a play that you can, like, you could actually read it. I either need to read it or I need to watch it, because I've noticed that, is this this one? Maybe. No, there was another one. Never mind. All right. I'm sorry. You know what? I read so many of Betty's poems, which is a great thing, because it means she supports a lot of our shows. She actually recently wrote a poem inspired by Madame Butterfly for one of my contests. So never mind that. Scratch that. This one, but yeah. I like how, you know, sorry about that. I was just thinking about a poem she wrote that was inspired by Madame Butterfly. Which would make sense, as this is called Crimson Butterfly. But I like how the imagery throughout this, sharp thorns consume her, kiss of good luck awakens, makes her feel free again. That freedom, as you were mentioning, that comes with going on to the next life. I also really like the imagery of Phoenix Butterfly, sweet fairy of dark forest, shimmers cherry red. That transition, as you said, that transition, that moving on to the next realm, to the stars. It's really cool that she wrote a rite that's so spiritual, and so sad, but without using any like emotional words, like just with the imagery alone, with the idea of the wrist dripping crimson and heal by enchantment. And there's this healing that goes on, that of the spirit, of the mind. And so beautifully written and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
We have Tickle a Root by Peter Solway. Tickle a Root by Peter Solway. Botanic. Intimate with fern and gum and transplantation. Splash of water, blast of sun. A gardener's toil is never done. Welcome to the nursery of Marxist alienation. Stock to sell, geraniums repot, labor exchange report. Art of income bashing out its tune, but to tickle the roots of rose, fondle Miss Daffodil in full bloom, blow in her gold funnel, no riddle. Honeymoon perfect, flesh as more botanical, over time in the greenhouse, worth the skin rash of rejection. End poem. Pam?
Yeah. Sorry, I was having a sneezing fit. But great read there, Rex. This AN is funny. Warning, not promoting a carnal relationship between plants and humans. Cacti can be hazardous to insert, gums nasty with sap, and ants, daffodils with rivalries. That cracked me up. This is compared to recently, this is a little shorter Peter's been writing, but it's still wonderfully thought-provoking. I like how it focuses on the idea of we are what we most put our attention on, like, you know, whatever parts of ourselves that we choose to water and fertilize, or whatever, you know, parts of life we choose to water and fertilize, you know, that'll grow. At least that's the main thought that I get from it. I really like Welcome to the Nursery of Marxist Alienation, Stock to Sell, Geraniums Repot, Labor Exchange Report, Art of Income Bashing Out Its Tune, But to Tickle the Roots of Rose, Fondle Miss Daffodil in Full Bloom, Blow in Her Gold Funnel, No Riddle. I like that it's intriguing, because with the mention of the Art of Income Bashing Out Its Tune, Overtime in the Greenhouse Worth the Skin Rash of Rejection at the end, it makes you think of, actually, you know, when reading those parts more out loud, I still get the thought of, like I originally said, but I also get the thought of somebody who works hard to provide money for a relationship that they really can't afford. And maybe it could even go further than a relationship, that works hard and works themselves to the bone for a hobby they can't afford. It's wonderful imagery and metaphors, and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's a field grower's guide to actually what is going on today and how things work in this manic, depressive angle of, oh, I got to have this, and this. And if you don't meet to this standard, well, you can go walk the other tune. But is the idea of that last stanza is, you know what? Play out the field, the roses, not just the roses, the daffodils, the honeysuckle, everything else. Don't bother sticking around just for the rose, because there are plenty of other flowers out there that have less demand for attention and detail and the frutality of what they want, as opposed to what to want.
Very cool. Very cool comment. What do you got for us next?
Oh, crap. Wrong one. Damn it. We got Fleur de Peau by Colap. And there it is.
All right. A Fleur de Peau by Colap. A Fleur de Peau, her petaled skin now mummified in layers upon layers of scar tissue, some visible, but most you can't see. But when the soiled rags are unsheathed, you might be surprised to find that the epidermis is still alive, well preserved, considering the extenuating circumstances. At the mere touch of a fingertip of a paid stranger, from the target spot, now goosebumps rise against her will. Someone whispers to lie down and stay still. I promise you it won't hurt. For long ago, they say she's cut the wire between her spirit and body. Now she seems to be living disconnectedly, a zombie and an artist, where flowers spill and blooms and tendrils from her skull box. Creating for her is just like letting out a yawn or a sigh. Wait, there now another bloom has dropped from the box. In that realm where she likes best, that of running through the woods of words and verses, naked, doing pirouettes, where her unconscious has free rein, and by some uncalculated stroke of coincidence, an end or an internal rhyme would crop up unintended like the pollen of poetry, which she's carried unknowingly under her wings and hairs of her legs, rubbing them on a cold day would be like sprinkling what is to become a field of white, pink, red poppies and cosmos to the infinity, popping up on her verdant mindscape, and then a mere accidental tap on her bare shoulders or forearms would send shivers down her spine, sending an electrical impulse into her head, and then body and spirit would reconnect. And no, I don't mean sex. I mean just a connection with the ethereal and the real. And this is what she seeks as she throws herself in the arms of the first listener, dematerialized, who feigns unconditional care. But before she can say when, veins of his impure intentions grow, spread, and ramify beneath her translucent skin, rendering an appearance that of a cabbage woman. But do not misread her exhibition. It's only because she ran out of paper. So she turns this event into one of a phantasmagoric nature with no sensual intent. She knows that love is like a fly you swat on a lazy, sunny day, and the making of it is like licking a melting ice cream cone on a sultry day. Do it quickly before it gets messy. A memento mori from Mahi Mori and poem. Oh, yeah, yeah. And your thoughts, Red?
It's kind of easy on this one. It's the idea of peddling flesh, but taking the simplicity of the act and the emotion out of it by wandering into her mind and letting the act take its course while still remaining maybe whole to herself in mentally, but without the frosted venue that she's engaged within because of those scars that are there, or the that what she feels that is there. I like that last stanza. She knows that love is like a fly you swat on a lazy sunny day, and the making of it is like licking a melting ice cream cone on a sultry day. Do it quickly before it gets messy. Memento mori, the memory of death from Mahi Mori, heaven's death. Different notion. Although the Mahi is off the Japanese side. So. The sensitivity worn out on this piece is from the angle of one who's within that life, but chooses to step outside the mind when engaged within it.
I like that. I like that. And I actually had similar thoughts, that it's that idea of someone who gets lost in their internal world to escape their external world, to, you know, the as you said, the selling of flesh and the disconnect between the mind and the body. I really like the imagery and metaphors in this. I like how, you know, that it speaks on the idea of, you know, like somebody, the heart and spirit of a person who loses their self in thought. I like how, especially like with lines like, you know, with her references to the artwork itself or the artist itself, her exhibition, it's only because she ran out of paper, so she turned this event into one of phantasmagoric nature with no sensual intent. I like how those lines and some of the other lines pay tribute to the actual artist and artwork itself. And I think this speaks on not only selling yourself for sex, but the idea of being an artist or being a poet and compromising what your vision for your art or your poetry is. I mean, I know that's not the main thought. I do feel like I have to agree with you that the main thought is the idea. of selling your flesh, you know, but and then escaping from that mentally. But you know, there's also this feel to me in some of the lines of you know, compromising your vision for your artwork. I really like the imagery in which she carried unknowingly under her wings and hairs of her legs and rubbing them on a cold day would be like sprinkling what it is to become a field of white, pink, red poppies and cosmos to the infinity. Yeah, I like the mention of the poppies, which, you know, you think of the, well, you think of the poppies for the war, but I also think of, you know, the poppy fields and the Wizard of Oz and how they cause you to be sleepy. And that kind of that escapism, that falling into a land of sleep and dreams. So excellent write and very well done. All right. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Crimson Carpet by A.R. Mundell. They walk on gilded splinters laid out across the ground, a carpet of fine needle points, no creak or sound. The most crimson of carpets, of velvet plush and blood, set down at their parents' step, away from mundane mud, forced to walk the path they set, no matter how they try, for stepping on a needle less, so oft makes loved ones cry. So they walk gilded gauntlets, from foot to foot their necks, always bleeding from the wounds of cats' unearned respect. Freedom floats about the sides, but they must stay the course, knowing that a taste of it could lead to life's remorse. They watch so many flounder there, the ones who drank that wine, seeing those dreams waste away, surrendering to time. They watch them fall to bitterness as they curdled in their mouths, spluttering in rising tide, treading water till they drown. And all the while they walk that path over mountains, rifts, and seas, carnelian carpets lining piers above those highs and lees. The blood still drips on those below like chum to hungry sharks, scrambling to reach the ledge that feet have long since passed. Their fingers touch the splinters once and let go with a yell, cursing them for tricking them as they fell back to that swell. Temptations nuzzle at their skin and reach across those piers, singing of nostalgic dreams they fled from all those years. In time their souls grow calluses like the light within their eyes. Their feet no longer bleed as they start to run on by. End pause.
Great read, Rex. And what an awesome write by A.R. Mundell. As always, she's got wonderful rhyme and flow, beautifully written couplets. Now, this is a wonderful write on you know, choosing to follow the path that you want to follow. I really like the imagery in this. I like the wordplay with how she put needleless, but she put needle and less as two separate words for stepping on the needle less so oft makes loved ones cry. I really like the imagery and the most crimson of carpets of velvet plush and blood sit down as their parents stepped away from mundane mud, forced to walk the path they set no matter how they try. The idea that sometimes a path is set before us or a path of other people's expectations. And I also really like freedom floats about the sides, but they must stay the course, knowing that a taste of it would lead to life's remorse. The unhappiness that comes with, the pain that comes with, you know, following the wrong path. And I think the mention of the sides really says, you know, there is no right or wrong path. You know, for some people, it works to follow in the family footsteps, and that's what they want to do. But on oftentimes when you can't follow your own dreams, you know, then there's just kind of a brokenness of spirit. Singing of nostalgic dreams, they fled from all those years, and time their souls grow callous, like the light within their eyes. It's interesting because calluses, they're a representation of somebody who's grown tougher over the years. And yet they're also a covering of wounds. They're a representation that, you've grown tougher, but you also don't feel the things that, the joy, the happiness that you used to feel in following your dreams. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, the crimson carpet and the gilded splinters, the needles, all point into that note of the rag trade, which is a great metaphor for applying on the notion of following in your parents' footsteps within the realm that they've annealed themselves into and wanting you to follow because of the company they created. Set down as the parents stepped away from mundane mud. That idea of you must follow, this is the hand down, forced to walk the path they set no matter how they try, for stepping on the needle less so often makes loved ones cry, the idea of the infighting within family because you chose to walk away. So it sits on two angles, those that stuck within and made it because, all right, they had that mindset, but she also drops into the back end of this with those that walked away and how the family reacts, but also how they still have something to work their life within, while others who are who stayed because they thought they had to out of deference, but their life stopped. Their fingers touched the splinters once and let go with a yell, cursing them for tricking them as they fell back to that swell. Temptations nuzzle at the skin and reach across the piers, singing of nostalgic dreams from all those years. So the idea is, it's a more, there's a duality in this. Well, actually, maybe a threesome, because you're looking into the generation that's handing over, the next generation coming on board that steps in easily, and those that step in not so easily, and are cursed for the fact that they didn't bother walking away to begin with. And those are the ones that usually take those businesses and run them full-fledged into the ground because they hate it.
I like that. And I can see that duality, too, the idea of covering, both sides, those people who make the choice to leave the family business and those who make the choice to walk the same path and the way it can affect us. So, excellent, excellent comment. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Life is Better with Lotion by Julie Buck.
All right. And Life is Better with Lotion by Julie Buck. Whether chronic or acute, the longer the laugh, the more relaxed the pressure. Whether a sandal or a boot, the more fragile the woe, like a parched pond forced the flow. Whether an elbow or hand, the passion pool stays dirty. Even hormones can't hide what's not pretty. Whether an easy glide or hairy strand, ski on my slope towards me, apply softness as need be on cracked hands. What means dizzy? He even questions his own emotion. Means your fluid is thick, I say. But no matter, because a dry life is always better with lotion. End poem. That one's funny. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, the back end kind of hints with a little bit of a note that you can always get by in life with something that lubricates the insides to actually make you a little more happier in the moment. Because she hits on a chronic or acute, the longer the laugh, the more relaxed the pressure. Truth in that. And then whether an elbow ahead, catch full say 30. Even hormones can't hide what's not pretty. So that life isn't always pretty. There's ugly sides to things that happen. Every now and then, you just got to dip yourself into something which takes you out of that which is hard at in the moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cool comment there, Rex. And before we continue commenting, I'd like to welcome Allison to the show. Welcome, Allison. Glad you could join us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, hello,
yeah.
Allison.
And if you have something you would like to share, you're welcome to put it on the topic board in Late Night Poets, Break On Through, 12-2, The Art of Lucio Fontana. So did you get a chance to read Julie Buck's poem?
Which one was that?
That was Life is Better with Lotion.
Oh, yes. I listened to that, and I liked it, and I really, without it, I didn't have it in front of me, so I don't have much to say. Sorry.
Oh, no problem. No problem. I liked this one. I thought it had great humor to it, also like an edginess. I enjoyed and appreciated the bite that was in there, and the idea of making it through the rough spots of life and love, how just adding a little extra lubrication can make things go a lot smoother. So excellent write. I like how she brings in a little conversation at the end. And very cool, very well done. All right, and what do you got for us next, Rex?
She's Not Ready by Darkened Aura. Heat radiates through her, anger drowning in a torrent of sadness. Screams echo off the now empty parlor walls. Not ready to let go, knees hit the floor, and she sobs uncontrollably. Family and friends are already at the burial, but she can't follow. She can't watch them lay mother to rest. She still needs her. Suddenly she feels a hand upon her shoulder, gentle, loving, familiar. The sweet scent of honeysuckle filled the room, her mother's favorite aromatic perfume, the one that made her feel safe and secure once cuddled in her mother's loving arms. She stood up, wiped her tears, and made her way to the burial, now ready to say goodbye to a vessel, knowing her mother was still with her in spirit and poem.
Great read, Rex, and what a beautiful heartfelt write by Darkened Auras. And Allison, your thoughts?
I thought this was an incredible poem. It encompassed so many of the feelings that I've had at funerals past, and that sense that you get that that person is still there, that's always been big for me. And when she says she can't watch them lay mother to rest, she still needs her. Wow, who can't relate to that when someone close to them dies? It was an excellent poem.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right, it is very relatable to, and especially to anybody who's lost a parent or, a spouse or, anybody they've really cared about. So, great comment there. And Rex, your thoughts?
Simplicity in the moment. She wasn't ready to let go, but something gave her that ease of notion. A tender memory from youth that sparked it to the point, hey, you know what? It is time, and you do have to pay a notice and homage very moment. But the idea being that there's an understanding of that which still lingers, its memory,
its heart.
Yeah, and you're right. The memory is important. The memories that connect us to somebody after they've passed away. That's in part, as you said, what keeps them near us. You know, I really like, and I've said this before, but one of the reasons I like putting abstract art up is to see the different things that our poets that write for our shows see within the art. And this is one of those, like, Darkened Auras wrote this, and then after I read her poem, I looked at the painting, and I was like, that does look like somebody bent over in grief. And the taller figure bending down to comfort them. I thought that is really cool that Darkened Auras saw that. There's a strong emotional impact with this rite. I like where she says, suddenly she feels a hand upon her shoulder, gentle, loving, familiar. The sweet scent of honeysuckle filled the room. Her mother's favorite aromatic perfume. I like those lines because it reminds us of the connection between scent and memory, or connecting scents with, like, specific people or places. And I like that the ending where she then has the courage, then has a change of heart to go to her mother's burial, because she knows at the burial is simply the body. It's the, as she says, the vessel, a vessel, which she's saying goodbye to, because her mother is still with her in spirit. So, wonderful rite and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
The Blade of Fate by God and the Light. And Allison, would you read that for us, please?
Yes. Just a second here.
Okay.
It's not. Let me refresh. The Blade of Fate?
Yes.
The Blade of Fate. Licking my wounds, a messy business, flavored with defeat, crushed feelings, a spigot I cannot turn off. As it tunnels its way through my skin, crawling ever deeper. Better not to feel at all, if only I knew how. Bits of myself falling from the chopping block, none is found acceptable nor worthy. I am whittled away by the carving knife of fate. How does one continue, having invested every fiber of self, now merely a shred, curling off the blade? Wow.
Great read. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Great read, Allison, and an amazing write by Garden Delight. And Rex, your thoughts?
No thick skin here. This one's too easily drawn into themselves because of the fear, instead of actually standing up and taking the licks as they come, because no, you don't ever get to the point where everything's working without actually having failed to begin with or screwed up somewhere along the line. So if all you feel like is a shred curling off the blade, then you really don't have skin thick enough to take criticism to the point where you can actually learn from it.
That is true. That is true. And yeah, there is a real sense of, you know, the pain and vulnerability within these lines, and, you know, the idea of somebody who really just, as you said, is a very sensitive person. And, you know, so great comment there. And Allison, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
I really love this poem. I think the way she did the stanzas was really great. Everything fell into place. And this whole, for me, it was not so much a person who was too touchy-feely. It was more, I saw it as something where what happens to a person when society and parents and peer groups just slice away at them, one bite after another, not acceptable, not worthy, whittled away until there's nothing left but a scrap of skin on the blade. I guess I related to that, and I think a lot of people who've had hard childhoods or been bullied would relate to this poem. Thank you.
Yeah, I could see that. I like that. Great thoughts shared. You know, the interesting thing about this particular piece of artwork is that out of the 13 entries that I had in the contest, I had three for sure, maybe four, that wrote to this particular piece of art, which is a red canvas with five slashes through it. And, you know, there is really something powerful about the color red, and there's so much that it represents, you know, blood, pain. And so it was interesting, though, because everybody had a different, you can see similarities in the same rites, and yet you can see differences, too. And as we get to the other rites, you'll see what I'm talking about. But I always find it intriguing to see when people write to the same prompt and see what the differences and similarities are that they get from it. And, I like how Rex brought up the idea of, being oversensitive. And you brought up the idea of, you know, that people become that way, you know, because of the way society, you know, treats them and betrays them. I like that she starts out with licking my wounds, a messy business flavored with defeat. Because healing, and I think this speaks on the idea of trying to heal and not always being successful at it, and how, you know, it can be messy. It can be physically messy. It can be emotionally messy. I also really liked bits of myself fall from the chopping block. None is found acceptable nor worthy. And I think that can speak in a couple different ways, because I think it can speak on the idea of being criticized by other people. But I think it can also speak on the idea of self-criticism. You know, as I've often said before, you know, about poetry or art, I was checking out some of my daughter's drawings that she does, and she was nitpicking on little details, and I'm like, yeah, well, you know, there's always room for improvement, but at the same time, we're also, because I think her drawing's awesome, but, you know, and I'm slightly digressing here, but I'm making a point, which is that, you know, we're always our own worst critics, and sometimes it is other people that tear us apart, and sometimes we do that on our own. But I did like the imagery in this. I like how it brings the idea of that sadness, that self-defiant, not defiant, that anger that you focus inward on yourself, you know, which is a form of sadness, I think. So excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Bottles by Betty Page. That was yours.
All right. And it goes like this. Obliterate me, vivid laser light shows scene, oh so mind-blowing, aquamarine beams, emerald vivid green glowing, intense hyperspace, swirling, twirling round, moves so rhythmically, perfect with each note, just fascinating, surreal, intricate, piercing, cutting magic wands, pure Star Wars intrigue, zooming high through outer space, Pink Floyd hypnotic, entering portals at all the doors of perception, embracing starlight, end poem. And I really like that Betty chose that image and what she got out of it. It was really a lot of fun and mind-blowing imagery. And Allison, your thoughts?
I thought that was really, I would say that was a fun poem. I liked each piece of it because each separate stanza, like, brought me to a new place with the light show. And I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're right. Like, each separate senru, which she always does a wonderful job with those, of having that, you know, all the lines can stand together, but at the same time, they also can stand on their own. And just, it is fun. And it really takes you into that kind of like psychedelic light show. So, great comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, the jig is up because of her AN, but I'd have gone that way anyway because of what she did roll into. The late shows, Pink Floyd, the Star Wars thought, running with the beamage rolling around. But also that last stanza walks into Aldous Huxley, not just the Doors, because the Doors of Perception was something that Morrison was heavily into, but it also hits on the idea of LSD, because that's what the Doors of Perception by Aldous Huxley was all about, taking LSD and moving into that realm where one's mind can actually open up to that which is seen, perceived, and felt all at once.
Absolutely, and you're right. You're right. Betty is nice enough to put extra information in her AN, and the jig is up, as you said. So very cool. I like the mention of Pink Floyd, and yeah, I like the mention of Pink Floyd. And of course, the mention of the Doors of Perception was very cool. Really great imagery in this and sense of movement. I like the sense of movement and, you know, swirling, twirling round, moves so rhythmically perfect with each note. Just fascinating, surreal, intricate, piercing, cutting magic wands. I like how that speaks on the magic. You know, not only the idea of the LSD and ecstasy trip, but the magic of music and art and even the light shows themselves. Just a fun write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
When the Sun Turns Sour by M. Sai Ulo the Dancer. But to the world of pain, some people have the equivalent of them, because in the world that is full of sin, we feel the pain of the people who got caught up in their sin. But I tell them that they will survive like these paintings of the haunted house. The world will shed a tear for them, because they are the embodiment of the house of the land. We cannot dictate what they feel, but it is to the sense of pain surreal. We fear it in the dawn of time, and in the mix of our hearts, it is on our mind that we should and none should feel pain, should feel a pain that is the violation of one's deal. The heart makes sort the sky. If they are happy, let this no longer be a lie. I ask for a God to dictate and sphere that he and she appears them in the sound of them near. For we feel the pain and steep, and in the sun of the moon, there is their house weeping. This thatch of a field is all to store. In some places it is war of the gore, for in a sense feel trauma pain. And if these people don't strive, God keep them from going insane. I hear their tear in every steer, in the tear of my house I call them near. so that they no longer feel the pain. In the sum of my love, I house them within, so that they can grasp the term. In the sun, I feel your heart, and it is my yearn. The state to the core, the life and door, and in the state of war, I breach the door, so that you may call in the hall of your life, net left. The pain of your, the pain out of your soul, I itch the pain away from tear, and then you are stunned. Let my love heal you in the sphere. Love, and poem.
Great read, Rex. Yeah, M. Fly certainly has a style that's all his own. It's almost very free-flowing feeling to it. You know, I like how this touches on the idea of healing. Even the title, When the Sun Turns Sour, it's the idea of that light that we look towards, you know, that healing light. That turns on us, you know, whether it's an actual sun or, you know, it's a metaphor for the idea of the, you know, people and things that we turn to for light and then don't no longer offer up that light. I really like his creative use of imagery in this. This botch of a feeling is all to store. In some place it is a war of the core for inner sense, feel trauma, pain. And if these people don't strive, God keep them from going insane. I like how that focuses in on our inward battles and, you know, the sadness, the anger inside and the struggles with our own spirit. And then I also like a pain that is the violation of one deal is a strong line. The idea, and which speaks to me on the idea of a broken promises. So just really wonderful, thought-provoking imagery and metaphors, and very well done. And Allison, your thoughts.
Yeah, I read this poem and I really, my favorite part was where it said, this botch of a feel is all to store. In some places it is a war of the gore for inner sense, feel trauma, pain. And I just like how the way he string things together, it just brought a lot of imagery to me that I could relate to, and I think he did a really good job with that. And it is a different style of poetry than I'm used to reading, so I need to reread this again because I think there's more to it than I'm seeing at first read. It's very well done.
Absolutely. And you're right. You know, some poems definitely need to be read more than once in order to, you know, get the layers within. Great comment. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. Kind of reads as Christ on the cross in his last moments. The idea of paying for everybody's sins, but then offering up himself as the notion for that, and then calling everyone unto his arms, so to speak. That's how it reads to me.
I like that thought. I like that. You know, the idea, as you said, you know, forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. Or, you know, those, you know, and then you mentioned that, and I thought of also the idea of, you know, let him who is without flaw or without sin throw the first stone. So great observation there, Rex. All right. And what do we got next?
The Matador's Cape by Eric Simpson.
And we have a SoundCloud for that. So here we go.
Matador's Cape. Cut and dried, five slashes, D decisive, incisive reach to reach. Go beyond dread's blatant occupation of space. Observation begs a metaphor. Veneration, not desecration. Matador's courage. Red cape could be slashed by bull horns. Art's arena addresses similar fears. Exacts courage from its maestros. Bonded blood, brothers and sisters. Veins record adrenaline rush. Cockroach sure, a new approach. Deconstruction of accepted norms. Cut and dried, five slashes. Consecration of creativity's crucible. Beauty in imperfection. Happenstance art. 15 seconds of fame too tedious. Matador's mystical cape mesmerizes. Five slashes, ingenious ruse. Birthplace of tango must have left deep impressions. Evita not the only one imploring Argentina not to weep. Coup d'etat administers five slashes. Cuts too deep for blood to clot, seal up wounds of recovery. Red sails in the sunset, five fingers, five slashes. Go deeper than blood ties that bind. Camaraderie of like-minded artists on foreign soil. Red windmill, Moulin Rouge. Matador's cape, red flags, provocation. Will painter's courage provoke critique? Mea culpa, flashbulbs on opening night. Five fingers, five strokes of luck. Avant-garde butterflies fan Matador adoration. Cut and dried, what lies beneath, below, behind, question. Five slashes, five senses band together. Sixth sense sought through trial and tribulation. Beauty and the beast reside within opium puppies. End quote.
Great read and write, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It's very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Rex, let's start with your thoughts.
Well, he said it in that, let's see, one, two, three. The fifth stanza, that first line, must have left deep impressions. And that's the idea. He's offering up impressionistic point of view with the impressions that are actually delved into, whether it's cloth, canvas, it doesn't really matter. And then hits on the idea of what they represent in a myriad of thought. The matador, bonded blood brothers and sisters, the painter with the five fingers, five strokes of luck, avant-garde butterflies, span matador adoration. Also with five fingers, five splashes, go deeper than blood ties that bind, camaraderie of like-minded artists on foreign soil. Idea of war in there. What else we got? 15 seconds of fame. Kind of hitting on that note of Warhol with the Campbell soup can. But the matador also works as well, way in this well, too, because the red cape and the five splashes, that might be the thought of sword actually underneath the cape itself had cut some deep impressions because they spend time in the field on that, the dance of the matador and the bull itself. So he's walked into a whole lot of stuff that it's designed walking off those five little slashes and done in a colorful way to where one can actually look at all of this and say, I can see every bit of this as part of that impression. And it's something you might only get if you stood and stared long enough at an art gallery and thought about what does this really speak of.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. And I can definitely see that. And yeah, because, you know, you got to, you know, delve into the color red and what that can represent, what the slashes can represent, and also the fact that he chose to put in five slashes. So you also have to look at what the number five. And as you said, Eric has really come up with a myriad of thoughts. So great observations there, Rex. And Allison, your thoughts.
This poem really made me think. I enjoyed it a lot. I am a person who would look at the picture, the red with the five slashes, and go, what does that mean? I'm just not real good at visual art. And then when he writes below it, now all of a sudden that picture speaks to me. And, what was the part? I can't find it. There was one part I really loved where it talked. There we go. Beauty and imperfection, happenstance art, 15 seconds of fame, too tedious. Matador's mystical cape mesmerized, five slashes, ingenious ruse. That was a beautiful stanza, and I loved that. To me, it seemed like he waved the matador theme back and forth throughout the poem, and that kind of tied it together. So I really enjoyed it. Excellent poem.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. It is a kind of poem that makes you think, which is good. And he did have consistency with the matador's theme because, you know, there was a bunch of different thoughts in here. By consistently putting that matador's cape in, it did tie things together. But yeah, I like the way that he makes us look at the painting, the artwork, you know, in a variety of ways, and really strong imagery throughout. Some of the stuff that really stands out to me is the bonded blood brothers and sisters, the idea of that connection between those who go through war together. I also like the beauty in imperfection, happenstance in art. You know, the tribute to the artwork itself and the idea that beauty can come out of imperfection. I also like the nod to the Moulin Rouge. I thought that, and, you know, camaraderies of like-minded artists on foreign soil, Red Windmill, Moulin Rouge, you know, it a nod towards the various artists that would gather at the Moulin Rouge, you know, and share their art and share their poetry. And just a wonderful, like, different historical references. It had some, you know, just thought-provoking and fun lines, great imagery, and definitely very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Emptiness by Cedar Chapman. And Allison, would you read that for us, please?
Sure, I'd love to. Emptiness. Written words slay my flesh, killing me raw to the bone. Each lash of your black ink, cursive whip, is blurred through bloodshot eyes. Each syllable desiccates my body. Fractured memories seep through paper fiber like brown storm water down a drain. Your apathy pooling on the dresser as a cruel artifact you wept alone. Drawers open like empty caskets, blocking trapezoidal beams of dust emanating from our bedroom window, its shadows smooth wooden hangers lying on the carpet as twisted cadavers that in our past glory once waltzed with sequined gowns and cashmere sweaters. Silence feels the emptiness now. Shouting has evaporated, the ghosts floating as perpetual blur of past memories, while I desperately clutch on to faint apparitions where your faceless smile haunts me still. Ballpoint mementos carved marrow deep impregnate chrysalidus in my chest. 1,000 unborn moths gnaw and flapping towards a lantern flame, flowing your voice. All the while, I sleep, eyes open, on an empty bed.
Great read, Allison. Well, this is a stunning write by Cedar Chapman. You know, I really emotive. And like I said, it was interesting to see how people took the same artwork in different directions. And he's actually got an interesting AN where he says a little bit about the artist. And I won't read all the way through, but I will mention near the end where he says he says that the artist, in fact, some of the paintings were subtitled A Testa or Hopeful Expectation. And then about himself, he says, I interpreted the slash as a representation of emptiness, a void that is bounded by something real but cannot be touched and can only be experienced. It is a darker poem, but the last stanza touches on the attesta concept. So I like that. I like that between the poem itself and his AN, where he puts in some information about the artist, that he either already knew about the artist or he did his research, which, you know, I think is an important part of writing poetry. And this is a wonderful emotive write all the way through about feeling, I like that it speaks on the silence fills the emptiness now. Shouting has evaporated to ghosts of floating as a perpetual blur of past moments. It's that idea of being in a relationship where there is no longer any caring. And I like the use of the word apathy. Fractured memories seep through paper fiber like brown stormwater down a drain. That is wonderful visceral imagery. Your apathy pooling on the dresser as a cruel artifact. You wept alone. The idea of now being alone because of the emptiness, the silence offered up. And so excellent write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, all things about emptiness and that realm that one finds themselves wrapped within, inside that emptiness. He hits on quite a bit. You think of that, the bloodshot eyes, kind of nice representative note to the emptiness there. Each syllable desiccates my body. Again, the emptiness. The drawers open like empty caskets, lying on the carpet as twisted cadavers. Also, again, emptiness. But he tossed in such notable thoughts as in our past glory, once waltzed with sequin gowns and cashmere sweaters. So the thoughts of the wooden hangers now twisted cadavers. And then again, silence fills the emptiness now. Shouting has evaporated to ghosts floating as a perpetual blur of past moments. Again, emptiness, but the void within that emptiness is filled with things, the sweaters, the sequin gowns, the hangers, the empty drawers, the dresser, the sort of fractured memories. Everything, the void is filled with noted touches of stark contrast to the emptiness. And that last stanza, again, rolling right back in. I sleep, eyes open on an empty bed. So the empty bed is not really empty because he's in it. Yes, he's so hollow that he feels empty. So the bed itself is actually a pure representation of that picture and the emptiness all-consuming.
Absolutely. And yeah, and that's very true, because nothing's ever officially empty, especially like the emptiness is on the inside, as you said, because even like if somebody has moved out, you know, whether it's a relationship, a romantic relationship, or maybe a child has moved on, so you're dealing with empty nest syndrome, there's still those things left behind. It's that, you know, and I like how you brought up that, you know, the bed isn't technically empty because he's in it, but there's still that feeling of emptiness that lurks within. So, great observations. All right. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Oh, Rorschach's Dimension by Colette. Yours.
All right, a Rorschach's Dimension. In the citrus backdrop of dreams, you burst through the canvas of days, a Rorschach display, a forsythia kiss in the guise of a vulture, or a vulture that just needs to be tamed. For what's in a name? I need not venture into a taxonomer's realm, for all things can be anything, is seen through the prism of objective reality and not in the delusion of phantasmagoric dimension. If I pet your beak intrepidly, unconscious of the consequences, I tame my fear and in the process tame you too, dear. Always stay near me. Now I hum and sing while I gently place a lasso or a noose for what's in a name. Crazy is as crazy does, and slowly tighten it without you even noticing it. Look now, years later, your crook cooing and poem. All right, well, that was, I really liked that one. And your thoughts, Rex?
I like the open in the citrus backdrop of dreams, and then that thought of forsythia kiss in the guise of a vulture. Or a vulture that just needs to be tamed. It's a matter of perspective, what one sees, or what's in a name. And then she has done the sort of taxonomy, nice touch there, considering it does give that Build-A-Bear sort of taxonomy, so to speak. And the sort of objective reality, and not in the delusion of a phantasmagoric dimension. The idea is that don't offer up something so far outside the realm of possibility that it becomes the madness you seek, because it is the madness you want. And I like this one. If I pet your beak intrepidly, unconscious of the consequences, I tame my fear and in the process tame you too, dear. Again, that rolls right back to the idea of a vulture, or a vulture that just needs to be tamed. So there's duality there. And the back end is hits on that that note of always stay near me. Now I hum and sing while I gently place a lasso or a noose. Again, the what's in the name. It's all a matter of perspective. And the thought, crazy is as crazy does, and the idea of choking off existence to the point where your croak cooing is the idea of you're walking on both the pain and the pleasure born of self.
I like that. Cool thought there. Very cool. Yeah, I like how this delves into the bending of reality and the idea of perception. And then goes in the whole idea that we can take it too far, or it can be used to take advantage of people. And that especially comes through to me in the idea of I gently place a lasso or a noose for what's in a name. Well, you know, like there's a lot in a name. A lasso you're going to remove, a noose you're going to, you know, hang somebody with. And I like how this, you know, also does the end lines and the idea of becoming a prisoner without realizing you've become a prisoner, because you're that croak cooing. I thought that was such a clever phrasing, croak cooing. The idea of that wild animal, that vulture, that has become a prisoner and doesn't see it as such. I really also liked the, I need not venture into a taxonomer's realm. That cracked me up when you mentioned Build-A-Bear. For all things can be anything if seen through the prism of objective reality. And I like that she brings the imagery of the prism in there and how, you know, like there can be many facets, many layers to how we see something, how we interpret something. So excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Taking a Stab at It by Scott Sharp. We descended, slowly approaching the surface. Dagger holes punched into nature's canvas awaited us. Shelts from the cold wind of outer space, landing spots on a distant world, God carved out for us a place where we could take a stab at a new life. In bonds.
Great read, Rex. This is a wonderful brevity. I like how it tells a sci-fi type like story. In only like two stanzas and one line. But there's layers beneath it. Like, you know, to me, it speaks on the idea of people who go to a new planet or, you know, maybe to the moon and to start a new colony. And the reason they do so, even though it doesn't really say it in here, is to me the idea that they've destroyed the earth. I really like how he gets that out of the artwork that he chose. I like this all the way through, but especially that beginning sentence, we descended slowly approaching the surface, dagger holes punched into nature's canvas awaits us. It makes you think of, you know, obviously as we approaching the moon and the holes within in there, the craters. But it also makes you think of the idea of just the destruction on nature. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
You got to go a step further, Vincey's. It says taking a stab at it, and it's prompt 11. My guess is that's the red image with the five slashes.
That's a good question. I don't know for sure. I don't think so. I think it's one where there's actual, like, the brown painting with, like actual
yep.
round holes in it.
Okay. Well, I was going to take this lyric since it is popping up, taking a stab at it, and I was thinking of the right picture. This kind of hits more on the idea of a trip to Mars, taking it and transforming that into a relatively habitable space.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it does have that idea of, you know, taking that trip into outer space. And I could definitely see how you'd say think Mars when, you know, you're thinking the red picture, because, you know, it's Mars being the red planet. Yeah. Cool thoughts shared. All right. And what do you got for us next?
Wailing Soul by Rain.
Ah, and it must be my turn.
Yep.
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right. Wailing Soul by Rain 474. Soothing sea killing me, ah, flee. I saw a bee chasing me, the green crabby, bulging out my eye that once said sweet hi. But now see my adducted limbs that sends across sphere hymns, scooping out my white globe, leaving me behind with no hope. And now my teeth chatter, singing the song of the death hunter, roaming freely in search of sinners, standing in queue of innocent winners. Cut, 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 beats my teeth. O God of Seth, save me from this death. End poem. Wonderful, wonderful lines there, very thought-provoking. And Rex, your thoughts.
A wailing soul, cry out for something more than that is, that chasing me, the green crabby, bulging out my eye, that once said sweet eye, kind of hits on that idea of what once was sweet but now is rancid, abducted limbs, scooping out my white globe, leaving me behind with the hope, kind of hits on the idea of lost spirituality and sea chatter, the coldness within that realm, roaming freely in search of sinners, standing in queue of innocent winners. Ooh, you know, begs on the thought of, yes, it does walk that line of straying too far from the fold of one's spiritual thoughts and finding out what lies beyond and why you're there in the first place.
I like that. I like that. And yeah, it does have that idea of even with the title Wailing Soul, that feeling lost. You know, that fear that comes with. Yeah, I really liked the, but now see my adducted limbs that sends across fear hymns. The idea, I like the phrase fear hymns, the idea of, you know, songs sung out in fear. I also like the end stanza, cut, cut, cut beats my teeth. O God of Seth, save me from this death. I like how it's like a crying out to a higher power, a calling out to God, a looking for a renewal in life, a renewal of the spirit. So, excellent write and very well done. All right, and what do we got next?
Six by Pee Wee Couson. Calliopes and clowns with disinterested chatter. You had heard she'd been found. It didn't matter. Find her today and then take her away. Put her up, down in the ground to stay. It's time to think of some entirely new tricks. This one that's coming up is going to be number six. Cleanliness and sanity, all of this godless humanity, threw you aside, but now you'll make them see. Everything that ever was, anything that mattered, be revealed with number six when she springs in tatters. Knife to the throat, choker chain choked, ice pick to the liver, all the way he's found to easily bleed her out, which one should give her. Paralysis via spine, poison her with iodine, drug and dismember them, make a puppet friend, maybe from their skin, to play with up until the end. Donning his makeup time has come to take up this old clown mask he wore at least once again. And now from the van he can see her stand, time to go and introduce himself. Time to go and excuse herself, go and shake her hand. This one had fallen for all of his dirty carny tricks. As you now see for you and me, nothing other than lovely six. Too easy was this one, he thought in his mind, as the biggest issue for him, tally mark or another line.
Great read, Rex, and awesome write by Pee Wee. Makes me think of John Wayne Gacy, the killer clown from Wisconsin. But yeah, it definitely has a whole serial killer type vibe to it, which, you know, I thought he did quite well. It has great rhyme and flow. Did he write to prompt number six? No, he wrote to prompt number one, which was the red painting with the slashes through it. And again, so this is a fourth person, somebody who sees in a different way. And I like that. I like that he took that into the representation of blood and violence, but also the red can represent the red of a clown's nose. I really like the opening stanza with calliopes and clowns with disinterested chatter. You had heard she'd been found. It didn't matter. Find her today and then take her away. Put her up down in the ground to stay. The idea that, you know, in the mind of the serial killer of, you know, there is no escaping. You may temporarily escape, but in the end, I will find you. He also just wonderful visceral imagery. I like where he brings in paralysis via spine, poison her with iodine, drugs, and dismember them. Make a puppet friend. You know, just really great creepy darkness. The lines, the mention of paralysis via spine, poisoning her with iodine, gives you the idea of somebody who has a knowledge, like either works like as a nurse or a pharmacist, or even a doctor, like within the medical field. Like it makes me think of a killer clown pharmacist. That's what that makes me think of. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, yep, it is a serial killer, but it's done with a little tongue-in-cheek flavor. Then with the reference to six, because he got it written three times inside, six, six, and six. So it all paints the back end of evil as the devil, so to speak, but the evil lies within. Got note to, put her up down in the ground to stay. Thing of Norman Bates. He's got a touch of a number of serial killers. You've got a poisoner with iodine, you can drug and dismember, ice pick to liver, choke a chain choke. So got a hit. Maybe notes to Bundy and a few others to walk in this as well, besides the clown. What, that's just one of them. And donning his makeup time had me thinking of there was a great movie back in the day, serial killer dressed up as a woman. Oh, I can't remember. Had Michael Caine in as the killer.
Huh.
Anyway.
Cool.
Anyway, the biggest issue for him, tally mark or another line, there's a little tongue-in-cheek flavor to that, because that's an hit on the idea of how does he mark this one? Does it raise a special mark, or just another simple cut along that tallywhack?
Yeah, I like that you brought up those end lines because, yeah, there is that kind of tongue-in-cheek in it, but there's, yeah, the, and the thought of that none of this, the killing doesn't matter to him. You know, what really matters to him is simply, you know, is it that another tally mark or another line? You know, how much further is, you know, like, how is he going to count these killings? Not that they're going to stop, but how is he going to count them? So, cool comment there. All right. And what do you got for us next?
Bullet Hole in Farmland by Swanton.
All right. On the side of an old tractor where the paint was slopped on by someone who was in a hurry, there are 23 bullet holes from two different caliber bullets, and some of the paint has chipped off. The field is still and the air is cold. A mist of fog skirts through the trees and the bullet holes are fresh. I skirt along the tree line looking for a shape. A silhouette, perhaps a slight movement. Ears are turned to listen for a cough, a whisper spoken too loud, or the clink of metal from the swivel clanking, or worse yet, a charging handle pulled steadily to the rear and then released. There is nothing out there but stillness and a few starlings gathered on a small scrub oak. The hay has been mowed and the harvest brought in. The field is wet and silent, and I shiver a little, partially from cold and more so from fear. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, this kind of walked on that note of hunt and hunted, or we have a madman running loose. There's that first stanza at the bullet hole, the paint, some of the paint shift through. Yet, it also notes the bullet holes are fresh. And then that shiver runs up the back, and all of a sudden, you're glancing around because you know where they're coming from, where they came from because of the old tractor. But now you're definitely aware that there's something out there that might not be amenable, and that is what lurks, because you've already been out in those fields. You've mowed, you brought the harvest in, yet something is lurking on the outer skirts, and it's not something that you want to see.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, this really had an eeriness to it. And you're right, because of the fact that the bullet holes are fresh, you know, and you know, there, it's, Cress in her comment called it very atmospheric. And I thought atmospheric was a perfect word to describe that. And I like that there's an eeriness to this. And a sense of violence, but yet you don't know what's out there. It's that observation of seeing those bullet holes, realizing they're fresh, and as you were mentioning, realizing that there is something out there. And I like how this speaks on how haunting, silent, how terrifying. Haunting, I don't think is the right word. Terrifying silence can be when you know something is out there and you don't know what the next noise you're going to hear is. And I like that he brings a little bit of nature into this, like there's nothing out there but stillness and a few starlings gathered on a small scrub oak. And how, you know, everything is, like he says, the hay has been mowed and the harvest brought in. All the work has been done. So all that work has been done without the realization that they were in danger. And now comes the impact of realizing that there is danger out there. So excellent, thoughtful, right, and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Slash a Canvas by Peter Solway. Lucio Fontana. Knife instead of brush. Next step in real art. Realism plus a wall so mortal and resistant. Madonna of blue linen, rabbit-sized, slash for deeper meaning, disturb spider to action. Crawl out when guards sleeping, Mona scared of eight-legged modernism, Italian anachnophobia in Renaissance section, trying not to smile, but scream. Marinetti and loud gunfire, bronzes perforated in adjacent rooms, guards in black shirt uniforms, the art of blasé destruction. Lucio, man of the slashing moment, an unknown, up there with the cave painters, scratching on limestone, dreaming flatter ceilings, discover what's behind all creation, a woman with eight legs, egg-laying in disturbed apartments. Italian Kremlin moving in, tanks and spray packs, end of spaghetti civilization, pasta of reverse progress. Art critic, crippled by time, Fontana, no household name, Lucio, parents ill-named, boy with brains, vengeful with genitals. Clever with art not meant to last, winning the winning medal at Cannes by an anal machine gun, the slideshow Bastille, critics saying his style predictable, start the downhill revolution, Jack and Jill all out of fossil fuel, Cali moving closer, big getting bigger with fanged vaginas. Lucio gone to America, changed his name to Luck, single syllable, attempted to write a book, a semi-fictitious novel, about the days of destructive hope. Galleries demanding slash another canvas, this time begin linen, charge a tad more, hanging borders. Some Caesar's reincarnation, admiring such close shaving, drip of patient limestone, one day the clock of time, Luck to make it big, richest shares in Qantas, renouncing his fascist past, boyhood name of embarrassment, starting a Rubens production line, like Jeff comes, for all the world to see, Spider and E, exhibition sold out in Italy, but Luck be fucked, losing the lot, stabbing himself in the foot, always an art of loss. Lucio Fontana, brand of gelato. And pop.
Ah, great read, Rex. You know, this has such great bite to it. Wonderful humor. A look at, I think, similar to the one earlier you mentioned, the 15 minutes of fame, but also how sometimes fame comes simply by luck alone. I really like the wordplay and imagery in this. I really like crawl out when guards sleeping, Mona scared of eight-legged modernism, Italian anachrophobia in Renaissance section, trying not to smile but scream. The fear of what we don't understand. I also like rabbit-sized slash for deeper meaning, and the nod towards the artist in itself, and you know, the idea of how, in part, maybe becoming famous because of luck in the moment. Art critic crippled by time, time capitalized. I'm guessing Time magazine probably had something to say about him. I haven't read the article, but, you know, given that he capitalizes time, I have to guess that that is a reference to Time magazine. I also liked how he played with the last name of the artist, Jeff Koombs, which is actually spelled C-O-O-M-B-S, but obviously purposely spelled C-U-M-S. The idea, starting a Rubens production line like Jeff Koombs, for all the world to see, Spider and He exhibition sold out in Italy. That thought on when art gets to the point where it's so mass-produced that it's generic in what it has to offer in thought. Of course, that ending did crack me up. Lucio Fontano, brand of gelato. Don't know if that's actually a brand of gelato, but there was just something kind of fun and bouncy about those lines to end with that just kind of threw you off. Maybe, you know, it's that idea of calling the artist and his work the idea of something that's overly, I don't want to say overly sweet or processed. Well, that's those are the words that come to my mind. But, you know, just a clever write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
He's done quite a bit playing with the sort of Lucio Fontana, but he also drops in Marinetti. He was the founder of the Futurism movement, and he wrote the Futurist Manifesto and co-authored the Fascism Manifesto. He also died in 1944, so that kind of drops a load of thought within this too, because I like the Italian Kremlin moving in, tanks and spray packs, and the spaghetti civilization, pasta of reverse progress, the thought of taking the Renaissance and despising the angle of the Renaissance, denying it, and then walking back in time itself. Then he hits on the thought of Lucio gone to America, changed his name to Luck, single syllable, attempted to write a book, a semi-fictitious novel about the days of destructive hope. I like that thought with the change his name to Luck. It's a reference to Lucky Luciano. So you get the Lucio and the Luciano angle walked in there. Sort of now he's being seen more in boardrooms. And then again, rolling into Caesars, the close shaving, the rich in shares in Qantas. Yeah, I don't know if Qantas is still an airline that's alive. It might be done. Then Rubens, it's on the notion of Rubens because of his portrayal of women. And the thought of the Madonna, not Madonna, the Mona scared of eight-legged modernism. Kind of a note to how things, the spider dips its legs into everything. It's almost the spoilage note there with the idea of laying eggs and it just skittering around to produce more and more and more. You got the black shirt uniforms, sort of the Italian special guard during the war. So it's quite a bit packed into this.
I like that. I like that. And you just made me think that there actually was an artist we did a bit back, but I don't think her name was Mona, but maybe it was, who actually was known for doing, like, giant statues. She did a giant statue of a spider. And as you were commenting, I thought of that, but I can't remember what her name was, if it was Mona. Probably was. But anyways, really great observations there. All right. I know we have a couple poems, but I'm just going to carry those over because I do want to mention some upcoming shows that need rights. And so join us tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company, and Saturday, 12:30 a.m., Part Sinner, Part Saint with Aphasiana and Babbler. And I would like people to check out the following contest for Sundays after midnight show. Solace of Shadows, the artwork of the Archangel, ran by Fill My Eyes. Needs rights. And also The Art of Seduction, She's So Beautiful, also ran by Fill My Eyes, needs rights, and that's for Wednesday's show. And Rex, I know your contest for Rhythm and Rhyme for Sunday's show also could use some rights. So tell us about that show and that contest.
Sunday. Bring your own, pick your own blues song, your favorite, bring it to the table and make us feel it in your voice. What you think, what you get out of it.
Very cool. I'm looking forward to that show. I love when people are inspired by music, but blues music especially, it has such an emotional impact. Great show tonight, Rex. As always, thank you for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you to Hats and Pee-wee for hanging on the board. Thank you to Allison for calling in. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, listening now or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And make sure to check out all the topic boards and contests put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And have a good night, everyone, and have a good night, Rex.
Good night.